relating to...
This is George Norrie inviting you to join me at X Conference 2010, the weekend of May 8 and 9 at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Is the U.S. government withholding the truth about extraterrestrials engaging the human race? Could formal disclosure about extraterrestrials take place during the Obama administration? This and more will be covered at X Conference 2010 at the National Press Club, 2 blocks from the White House and 12 blocks from the Capitol. The conference will include lectures, an awards banquet, a speaker's cocktail party, and, oh yes, a special luncheon presentation with yours truly. Come learn why, when it comes to UFOs, it's no longer just about lights in the sky. It's about lies on the ground. The National Press Club is just 2 blocks from Metro Center, and there are 24 hotels nearby. The event website, x-conference.com, that's x-conference.com, or call the Paradigm Research Group, 202-215-8344, that's 202-215-8344.
Good evening, and welcome to this week's worldwide broadcast of The Joyner Report. Now here's your host, Angela Joyner.
I am going to try and get Deb Cobble on with us again. We just had some technical problems and just had to ditch that show, and hopefully everything's going to go smoothly tonight. To begin with, in case you haven't been with us before, last month I had a series of 3 shows about ongoing phenomena in the great state of Oregon. First, we had Jamie McDowell, an award-winning journalist and former Armed Forces radio and TV journalist, share her experiences in the woods of Oregon, of which she is a native. She described light balls that would appear, disappear, and reappear in different locations, a vibration that moved from her tailbone up her spine to her head, and how she and a cameraman were knocked to the ground by some sort of unknown energy. She thought it was something like electricity, but they're out in the middle of the woods, no electricity around, supposedly. The 700 Sony camera was disabled for a period of about 10 minutes. This is the camera they were using to try to get footage of these light balls. And when she was knocked down, she had the breath knocked out of her. She described a sense of knowing where the light balls would be next, even though she never considered herself to have any psychic ability. She couldn't really explain that part of it. She ended up seeking professional counseling over the event, and it profoundly changed her life. She also testified to the honesty and integrity of Bob Pitchell, who led her on this expedition. Jamie is the founder and president of verticalstudios.com. It was a compelling interview. Whether you have ever been in the realm of paranormal or UFO investigations for a month or for 30 years, it was compelling. But for some reason, it didn't get much attention in the UFO community, or at least not in the circles that I'm in. Next, we had Jack Peters. Jack was with Jamie the night she described to us in the first show that I was just telling you about. Jack is an author, photographer, and loves an adventure. He's from Eugene, Oregon, and Jack uses GPS and other technology to teach others how gear can enhance their own adventures, from off-road driving, search and rescue, and shipwreck archaeology. And he is an educated person. He has a bachelor's degree from Northwest Christian University. And Jack told us that he hopes to produce a film about the strangeness in the Oregon woods, particularly what happened to him on that night. He basically confirmed Jamie's story and testified to the light balls, of which he had taken pictures on several different occasions. We heard Jamie tell us, even though she has a high-dollar camera, the difficulty they had in capturing these things on film. But some of Jack's photos were sent to my friend Tonio Cousin in France for analysis. Antonio and I are both members at Open Minds Forum, and that's how I know him, and I've worked with him on several projects. Now, some of those photos, the analysis came back, you know, that it was not identified. It was something unusual that couldn't be accounted for in the normal ways. One of them turned out to be the moon. I wasn't critical of that because that is very understandable to me since I've been there in the incredibly dense, dark forest. And when you have kind of scary things going on around you and, you know, everybody's saying, look at this, look at that, take a picture, get this, well, I can see how that would happen. So that didn't trouble me. Then my husband Randall and I told of our own experience of seeing what we believed was a craft on the ground with a bright light shining on it, not from it, and how it appeared to have some kind of biological component to it, and how for three nights it seemed like the animals that should normally be there were just gone. No owls or birds of any kind, no raccoons, skunks, or deer. We couldn't even see anything with the Generation 4 night vision we were using. I had borrowed that from a friend. The deer were abundant in town, and they could be seen wandering between the homes in the early mornings, and I saw dead raccoons on the road and, you know, birds everywhere. And it was just really strange. Where were the animals? People, even if you believe the craft we saw was a hoax of some sort, how do you account for that? My husband, like Bob, is a hunter, and he has a keen eye and is in tune with his surroundings and environment. And he found it just as strange as I did. We're both from the country, and the missing animals were almost as weird to us as the craft we saw. Now, all of those shows are in the archives, so if you missed one of them, you can go back to the March shows and find those. Now, my friend Frank Warren of UFO Chronicles has been in on this Oregon case with me from almost the beginning. Frank first reached out to me after the Stephenville events in 2008, and he has 30 years of experience in researching this stuff we call UFOs and ETs and government cover-ups, conspiracy theories, and you name it. It covers a whole broad range of stuff that nobody really seems to have all the answers to. Then you have the mis or disinformation, however you want to refer to it, and the hoaxers, and it becomes a really muddled field. But there are some serious researchers that do good work, and I think Frank is one of the good guys, which is why I turned to him for advice and information after I had my experience in Oregon, and even before that, really. He's done a wonderful job of hosting a show for me on several occasions, and you, the regular listeners, are familiar with him. And for anyone listening that is new, I encourage you to visit his site, UFOChronicles.com. And take a look at the wealth of information there that Frank has sorted out and compiled over the years. Tonight, Frank is going to co-host with me once again, and we're going to bring Bob back on and a new witness, new in the sense that you haven't heard from him before, to the Oregon case, and his name is Nathan Hansen. I first met Nathan on my first night there with Bob in Oregon, and he went out with us. But first, Frank and I are going to talk about some things that have been troubling us. Welcome back, Frank, and thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Ange, and the pleasure is all mine, of course. You know, I'm always honored to host the show in your absence, and it's a double treat when we get to co-host together, particularly with tonight's guests and this topic. And for our listeners' benefit, this is another Joyner Report exclusive. The witness that we're going to bring out later has never spoken in any public forum or arena before. So you just keep knocking them out of the park in that regard. I'm really looking forward to tonight's show.
All right. You know, I just want the listeners to know this, and there's a lot of people from Open Minds Forum that listen to me, and I have a lot of good friends there, and there are some that are trying to help me figure out a way to get equipment and finances and that, and how to get, you know, boots on the ground researchers there. then that's our goal. We're bringing this story to you because what we would like to see is researchers with credibility and knowledge to investigate this further. And whether that's Frank and myself with the proper equipment or it's someone else, we're both convinced it warrants at least that, right, Frank?
Absolutely, Ange. You know, there's ample evidence that not only is something extraordinary occurring in the forests of Oregon on a regular basis, but it appears to be multifaceted. And what I mean by that is that there seems to be so many different types of phenomena taking place, I don't think we can put one label on it. And as I said in one of the earlier shows, I hate to use the term paranormal, but it's the only thing that really fits. You know, it's reminiscent of the phenomenon reported at the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, or the occurrences at Ash Fork in Arizona, or James Gillian's Ranch up in Washington. You know, we've got all these commonalities at all of these locations. It's just mind-boggling. And the big thing, I've always stated that money, or more accurately, the lack of it, is one of the major problems with ufology, and that certainly is the example here. This case needs to be investigated following a scientific methodology and documented at the same time, and none of that can happen without any proper funding.
That's right. And that's the thing nobody wants to hear. I know. But I know most of you listeners have no problem in believing ETs are visiting us here on Earth, and evidently that they've been doing that for quite some time. It took me a while to get my head around that, but, you know, I'm still getting there. We hear testimony of human abductions, cattle mutilations, grays, Nordics, reptilians, lights in the sky, unknowns on a radar report, and so forth. But you get someone talking about actually seeing these things, and it's an automatic turnoff for a lot of people. The open mind goes right out the window. They say it must be a hoax, or the person is delusional on drugs or whatever. So we're supposed to have an open mind, and we have all these people that think this go on. So why is that, Frank? What happens there?
Well, I've got a name for it, Ange, and I call it cognitive bias. And as a people, our collective thinking is the sum of societal programming and or our parental upbringing. In short, our brains start out in a box. We all start from that position. We see examples of this all throughout our history, and just to name a couple off the top, think of Copernicus or Galileo, you know, the church against science back then. I mean, we used to persecute scientists in this forward thinking. You know, I often tell folks that that when they come to ufology or they're new to ufology, they have to get their brains to ground zero in order to be objective, and they have to tear down the walls of the proverbial box, so to speak. That said, ETH, or the extraterrestrial hypothesis, they're still reticent to embrace cases like this one, and I suppose that's in our genes. For me personally, I go where the evidence takes me, and the evidence so far in this case has definitely got my attention.
Well, I understand that, and that's very true. You know, we've persecuted some scientists, and then, you know, 100 years later or what, however many years later, we go, oh, well, that they were right. Now, we got worried, you and I, Frank. We started talking about the last show we did with Bob, and we want to be able to attract an investor or some serious funding to this endeavor. And we kind of started to backtrack, too, and we kind of got caught up in that whole thing that we just described about, you know, it doesn't really fit with what you know about. I don't know how to explain that, but that's not what journalism and reporting is about, and we want to get to the truth, and we just need help doing that. So, Frank, if you can, just kind of describe, you know, how we were worried and what happened there.
Well, I think at one point, hell, we didn't know whether to laugh or cry. You know, I think the important thing is, I've often said that ufology needs a press agent, you know. what my fear is you know, what's going on with Bob and so many others that are experiencing this phenomenon up in the forests of Oregon. It just can't be explained in a two-hour radio show. It probably couldn't be explained in a six-hour radio show. So the fear for me is that when shows like this go in the archives and whatnot, that people take snippets of that, of the interviews, and then they end up being small sound bites, and they get taken out of context. So I don't think it's not that we want to explain this thing in its totality, but to do so, and as you and I know, this is a bizarre case. I mean, there are so many things going on that have been seen by competent, sober witnesses. It's just it's mind-boggling. And the fear is that we just get this out in bits and pieces and people think that we're all crazy. And quite frankly, I mean, when I first got involved in this thing, I was wondering the very same thing. I thought and I'm a ufologist, and for the record, I uphold the ETH, although the term extraterrestrial is a broad sense for me. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, Zetar came from Zeta Reticuli and flew here in a craft. It could mean other things. But the point is, this was so beyond the norm, you know, I had to take a hold of myself and go, what have we got going on here? And then the evidence starts to get put on the table. And you start to look at this evidence, and you get to know the witnesses, and you think, my God, something is going on, and it needs further investigation. And I think that's the only thing that we really need to clear up, is that in order to do this thing justice and describe every detail, it would just take too much time. So I think it's safer to just generalize on a few things until we can really get behind this and do the proper investigation, you know, that's necessary.
Well, I think so, too. I think that, you know, everybody has their own way of dealing with these things and their own conceptions. And people that have made up their minds, you know, we're probably not going to change those minds. Maybe we will. Some of the stuff that has gone on in Oregon is so far out there that you can't really wrap your mind around it. It's just difficult. And it's even difficult for me after a year and a half. Some things, you know, I just go, wow, what could that be? So while we may speak of entities or beings or whatever, we were not going to go into too much detail about that. And we'll take this approach, I think, until we get a chance to further investigate, if we get the chance. I don't know if we're going to have anybody really get behind this or not. And you, the listener or researcher, can make your own determinations. And if you've got any ideas for us on how to proceed, then contact us, because you can contact Frank at UFOChronicles.com. You can contact me at AngelaJoinergrip.com, and that's AngelaJoinergrip.com. And you can email me, and we're open to any ideas that somebody has about how to proceed with this in a serious manner. But, you know, what we're not going to do, and I've had some emails and some people on Facebook approach me saying, well, you know, when is the Skywatch party? I want to go to that. Is Bob going to take a group out so we can all see? Well, as fun as that would be and interesting, no, we're not going to do that. We're looking for a more serious investigation and not just a trip out into the woods, you know, with a bunch of things. So, you know, if you've contacted me about that, I've told you that already, but for anybody in the future that might be thinking that way, well, now you've got your answer.
And that UFO car wash didn't sit well with me either.
Oh, really? And why not?
Well, I just don't think we could do enough.
Okay, here we go. Let's bring on Bob. Bob, are you with us?
I'm with you, Angela.
All right. Now, Bob has been a native of Oregon, and we've had him on for one other show. And he has had ongoing experiences for the last 8 or so years. And he has not ever been public about it in the way of a radio station or a radio show or interviews, that sort of thing. He's never really wanted that kind of attention. But it's just come down to the fact that, well, if you want to get researchers out there, then he used his name. And so welcome back to the show, Bob. I appreciate you coming on with us again.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'm glad to be here, Angela.
How are things going in Oregon?
Things are starting to warm up. Springtime is a beautiful time in this state and treasured, especially where we live on the Oregon coast. Just beautiful. Great place to live.
Now, tonight, Bob, you're going to bring on someone that is going to be on the show with you. His name is Nathan Hansen. And why don't you kind of set that up for the listeners and tell us how you met him?
Yeah, that would have been on a steelhead fishing trip in eastern Oregon on a river that... one of the only rivers that steelhead run that high. It's the Umatilla River. And the day that I'll never forget the day that I met Nathan, because I wasn't going to go fishing, but I could see the fish actually running from the road. I knew they were down in there. And so nothing was going to stop me, but I didn't have any shoes. And to get out to the middle of the river and wade out where Nathan was on an island, it takes some doing against the current if you have shoes. So going out there, I must have fell at least 15, 16 times. And by the time I got out to the island, I was exhausted. And you ever had any humility, I had it then. But I was pretty much out of breath, and that's how I met Nathan on a fishing trip. Hello.
Ange, did we lose you? Well, Bob, what went on afterwards? That's how you initially met Nathan.
Yeah, that's how we had met. And anyway, after after that, we had seen each other a couple more times. He was a decent fellow, and we started to fish. We had that in common, and he turned out to be a good friend. And
Was there anything UFO related that went on between you guys? You know, did that subject ever come on or come up in conversation at all? Or
No, not at that time. No, there was time, but it wasn't as predominant, you know, and so it wasn't a topic. Really, it wasn't a topic up until the time that I had asked Nathan if he wanted to become involved, because I felt I could trust him in keeping things quiet. And a situation arose to where I was going to need another person. And so myself and the original partner that had found this stuff with me, we came to the conclusion that, you know, Nathan was okay. And so in 2006, I asked Nathan if he wanted to go out and see these things. And so that was the first time that subject had ever came up.
I'm back now. I'm sorry about that. We had a little microphone problem here on my end. Can you hear me okay?
We thought you got abducted.
But you're doing a fine job. And Nathan has been involved with this for quite a while, if I understand correctly.
Yes, since the summer of 2000, actually spring of 2006, 7, and 8.
Okay, well, let's bring on Nathan Hansen. Nathan, welcome to the Joyner Report.
Hi, glad to be here.
I met Nathan on the first night I was in Oregon. We were going out, Bob Randall, my husband, and Nathan, and we were on the logging road, so I spent several hours with Nathan and really enjoyed his company and found him to be upstanding young man. He's quite a bit younger than all of us. I think he's still in his 30s, right?
Yeah, in my 30s, 38 to be exact.
So you were the baby in that group, but anyway, we had a good time talking and discussing things, and I'm really happy that you decided to come forward and use your name.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here, and it is very very awesome. I've never had this experience before.
All right. Well, it's a real casual show, and we're all real friendly, and so you don't have to worry about anything like that. But why don't you tell us about your experience with Bob? What do you think of Bob? Is he an honest person? Is he delusional? What do you think?
No, Bob's a very genuine person, very trustworthy, and very, very good person. We've been friends for quite a while. We enjoy the outdoors and do a lot of fishing together. And, you know, when this was brought to me, I didn't know what to expect. It was just kind of like I had to see it for myself to believe it. And, you know, that's how I kind of looked at it until I finally went to see it. And I was like, I've never seen nothing like that before. And it still sticks with me to this day.
You are just a regular guy, right? You do some electronics work for the state. You had any kind of experiences before this, right?
That's correct. I had seen some lights in the sky and things like that, but nothing like actually these many type of experiences.
Okay, why don't you tell us, one of the things that I remember you talking to me about is you were going to a place where there had been some activity, and you sunk up to your knees in the forest floor. Could you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, Bob and I were out in the woods in an area where we've seen a lot of activity, and that particular night, we were looking down in a canyon and noticed a house down there. And I told Bob, I said, have we ever seen a house down there before? And he's like, no, I don't think so. And so we just sat there and looked at that. And you could see inside the windows, they had four square pane windows. And it looked like a log cabin house with a patio. And we were looking at this house going, that can't be. There's no house. We've never seen a house there before. And we just sat and looked at that thing, and it was there the whole night. And I was like, okay, well, the next day I'm going to go down and see if that house is really there. And
right.
So we went down the next day, and Bob stood up on the top of the hill, and I got my wader boots on and progressed down the hill. And it's in an area where the ground's unstable and a lot of dense trees and woods everywhere. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect when I started going down that hill, but I sunk down in the ground all the way up to the top of my wader boots.
So what do you think was there? I mean, was it there wasn't a house there.
Yeah, there wasn't a house there. When I got to the bottom of the hill and was face to face where the house should have been, there was nothing there.
And you're absolutely... Go ahead.
Is it possible that at all for certain that's the exact location? You know that area. You've been there many times.
Yeah, exactly. We've been there many times, and there's been a lot of activity in that area. So, and that's never been seen again.
So something that looked like a house was there, and then when you went to in the daytime, there was nothing there. But the area where it was, presumably, when you walked through there, the ground was incredibly soft.
Oh, yeah. It's in an area where if you had seen something there and tried to go after it in the dark, you would probably hurt yourself really bad in that area because it's pretty dangerous.
And no evidence on the ground of any disturbance. I mean, if the ground was that soft, obviously, if something was on the ground with any mass, you'd notice some disturbance in the ground or marks, indentations, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing at all there. When I got to the bottom of the canyon to see where the house was, there's just a field right there, and there's no evidence of anything other than just the grass blowing in the field.
So the grass didn't even seem disturbed?
No, there's nothing at all.
What were your thoughts? What did you attribute that to? How can a house disappear?
To me, from, you know, the discussion last time with Bob on the show, he had talked about another dimension, and to me, it seems to me like it is another dimension. To have things there and not be there, and how do they appear there? Where do they come from? Is it, you know, another dimension?
Mm-hmm. Did it seem as if you were looking through something, to, you know, a portal, for lack of a better description?
I didn't actually see a porthole, but there was a lot of other orbs in the area.
So there was other phenomena during the time that you witnessed this?
Yeah, there was other phenomena surrounding what, you know, the house that was down there.
Mm-hmm.
Not particularly right where the house was, but there was right in that vicinity.
So were they light balls, orbs, or whatever you want to call them?
Yeah, they were orbs, different colors, greenish, kind of blue, and white, and kind of an orange color.
Fast-moving, slow-moving?
Some of them were sitting still, and other ones were moving up and down, kind of hovering.
Did you have any explanation for what that might have been?
No, I know that... you know, like I said, this is in an area where we've seen a lot of activity, but it seems to be there always is, you know, these type of orbs floating around or sitting still on the ground, or, you know, they are moving around, and I have no idea what causes that.
Now, Nathan, you and I talked about this before we went on the air, but for our listeners' benefits, were there any physical effects, any electromagnetic effects, any static electricity in the air in the presence of these orbs? Did you notice anything, any collateral effects at all, aside from the light?
I didn't notice anything, any static electricity or anything emitting off these lights, but... like Angela said, that there was no animals or anything in this area. You couldn't hear a bird chirp or see an animal moving in the dark or anything.
And the next day, when what appeared to be a house was gone, the orbs were gone as well?
Yeah, they were gone too. And the birds came out and everything was normal. It's like a whole other area. You wouldn't even know it would even be there.
So, you know, what I wonder about this myself is, was that, and I'm talking to you, Frank, too, Frank, could that have been some sort of craft that only looked like a house and then, you know, it took off or left? Or, well, you know, why wasn't there any grass disturbance?
Sure, and that's exactly what I was thinking. You know, when you see something that you don't recognize immediately or something that isn't there, your brain wants to mold it.
Categorize it.
Certainly. You know, your brain wants to be comfortable with what it's seeing. So, you know, between the two, you're going to go to a house, a cabin, or that kind of thing, something that would fit out in a wooded area or out in the sticks, you know, opposed to a flying saucer. So that's what I would think, and that's not to say that it was a craft or anything, but it goes back to the initial statements based on all the collected information from the witnesses to date. There's so many things going on out there, it's just mind-boggling. I mean, it's not the first time we heard a witness use the term dimension or another dimension. Or portal,
right.
That kind of thing. So it's absolutely...
Well, and like on the craft that I saw, the only way that I could describe the windows, what I would call windows on the thing, where they looked like lights in a skylights in the roof of a house. They were that shape and protruded in that manner. So that's not, sometimes you just have to use the vocabulary you have to try to get your point across.
Well, exactly. That's right. You bet. Yeah.
All right. Nathan, I know that there was another time that you went out and you took your mom with you. And before you speak to that, Bob, I'd like for you to join in and tell us how this came about with Nathan's mother.
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking, and Nathan has a close relationship with his family, his mother and his brother, and was sharing some of the things that were happening to him since he had been involved with going out with me doing this stuff. And you know, the last people that you want on your list to think that you're a, you know, you're a
wacko,
correct, is your family, you know. And in the same token, I wanted to prove it to my wife and my kids, you know, so that they were okay with Dad. And Nathan, the same situation came up. And not only with his mother, but his brother also. That's, yeah, I understood, and knowing his mother, I knew that she would probably get real scared and would never remember where she was anyway. And, she's a good person, so I wanted him to have that peace. So, yeah, we discussed it prior, and then Nathan can take it from there.
All right, Nathan.
Yeah, I told my mother about this, and she said kind of the same thing that I said to Bob. I got to see it to believe it, you know. And so we went up there one night, and I was driving her car and took her into May. And that particular night, we were looking down in the canyon and noticed some white orbs floating around. There's probably around three of them, and one of them was up kind of high in the sky, and it was moving in very slowly towards us at the time. And I told my mother, I said, see, look at that, it's moving and it's coming towards us. And she's like, oh my God, it is. And the next thing you know, this thing was just shooting in right at us. And then my mom just said, oh, my God, let's get the heck out of here now. Step on it. And we just burned out and got the heck out of there. And I told my mom, well, you know, normally these things, they don't, you know, if they come up to you, they usually get close enough that they'll just turn the light right out and just sit there. And so she's like, well, I don't care. I want to get the heck out of here now, And,
well, what did look like? How large was the light that was coming to you?
Oh, I'd say at least three to four feet probably around.
Okay, and it was moving at a high rate of speed?
Yeah, at a high rate of speed. It was moving really slow at first, just kind of creeping in up in the sky, and then the next thing you know, it was shooting up right at us.
And this was at nighttime?
Yeah, this was at nighttime. I'd say probably around 10:30.
Okay.
And
did you get the sense, Nathan, you know, from all the accounts that we've heard from the witnesses that have seen the orbs, it gives me the sense that these are intelligently controlled. In other words, these aren't just random orbs floating around like balloons. I mean, when you see the thing, it almost senses your presence and come shooting at you. Did you get the feeling of an intelligence behind these things?
That's what I had that sense of, that was going on too. How there must be something down there that's controlling these things to do that. And I have no idea what it is, you know.
Yeah, you said something that I want to back up to a little bit, because you said you told your mother that generally, when you've seen these things before, they would come right up to you and the light would go out. What did you mean?
Well, for a time, around that time when we went up there, Bob and I had gone out too and seen basically the same type of orbs, and they would kind of creep in like that, and they would come up to you. Not like that though. That was going at a fast speed right at us, but these same type of orbs, they've kind of crept in close, and then they get to about 10 to 15 feet away, and then they shut the light out, or the orb light goes out, and it's a just total sense of who knows what's going on around you. You know, you just sit there and like, oh, what should I do? Should I leave? I think I'll get the heck out of here because I don't know where they're at. I can't see them.
Well, I know, because I had that experience when the light went off from top to bottom, from, you know, when Randall and I were there, and that light went off from top to bottom, it was pitch black again, and it does give you that really, you know, it kind of kicks in the adrenaline. You're going, okay, now what? What do we do? Do we get up? Do we move? Do we, you know, get back in the van? What's going on? Because it is a scary feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just it's a feeling of uncertainty, you know, just knowing what's could be around you. You have no idea.
Right.
In that particular instance, were you under the canopy of the forest? Could you see the sky at all?
Yeah, at times. The woods are really thick and dense in that area. You'd have to probably move around to actually see through the trees and to see, say, the moonlight or anything.
The reason that I bring that up is, having been in a few caves in my time, when Angela is described with the light going off and it got so dark, the first thing I think of is being in a cave. And there's, unless you've been in a cave where it's just that dark, you can't see your hand in front of your face. And then, of course, the sound effect, because a cave will absorb your voice and that kind of thing. That's what it made me think of initially, being that dark. But of course, if you could see the sky a little bit, it wouldn't be that dark.
It's still very dark, though. I mean, yeah. It is black. Like I had said before, when Randall and I were there walking down these logging roads, if I stopped in front of him, Randall would smack dab run into me. I mean, it is pitch black there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, that is an interesting time. And then you ended up taking your brother, who was ill at the time, right, Nathan?
Yeah, my brother had cancer, and, you know, at the time, he's like, well, you never know. I'm worth, you know, it might be worth trying anything. Who knows, maybe these guys have some kind of secret remedy, you know, to heal me. You never know, you know. So we thought, well, okay, we'll go up there and check it out. And then we had another experience with my brother up there, too, and Bob and I. We were all three of us were up there. And here again, it was at this, around the same time when we were seeing those white orbs, and this another one came down right close to us again. And if it wasn't for my brother being so sick at the time, we would have stayed there, and I think we would have had an experience. But this is the same type of scenario where it came right down close to us, and then as we started moving, the thing disappeared. So
I think that's a normal reaction, because, you know, we've heard these things before about, maybe ETs have the cure for cancer, maybe they have the cure for all of these illnesses that, you know, people really suffer from. And, you know, I've thought about myself. I have a thyroid eye disease, and I thought, gosh, if they're really out there, then maybe they could do something to fix my eyes. And I think that's a real normal sort of reaction, to want to take your brother out there and see if some sort of healing might happen with him. Don't you, Frank?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I agree. I mean, the notion is that we're talking about an advanced species. So presumably, if we have a species that can either travel interdimensionally or from long distances, you would think that they would, you know, have the same advancement in regards to health and, technology and whatnot. Certainly, yeah. But, you know, that also leads to the question that at that point, so you had, at that point in the game, you had speculated. I mean, you're thinking at this point that this is E.T. Is that correct, Nathan?
Yeah.
When you took your brother?
That's correct. You know, this unexplained phenomenon that we've been having up there and all the different things that can't be explained, that just tells us that their technology is way more advanced than what we have to offer here on this planet. And to know that, you know, makes you wonder if actually they would have some kind of remedy, you know, that would heal cancer or any other ailment that, that somebody might have.
So, Nathan, at what point did you start thinking this is an extraterrestrial presence?
What was that again?
At what point did you start thinking there was an extraterrestrial presence? Or an alien presence?
Well, actually, I've seen beings, too, but there's been definite evidence of, you know, something going on that would lead me to know that this is not a normal thing. And,
so this is not something of this Earth.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, after several experiences up there, I pretty much figured it out that, you know, I must be one of a kind person, Bob and I both, to be able to see all these things.
Right. Okay, so now we're talking, you've seen these things, Bob's seen them. Jamie McDowell has seen them. Jack Peters has seen them. And there's even more people than this, folks, that have seen them, but not all of them are willing to come on the radio, and I don't want anybody to come on that is not willing to use their name, because I just feel like if we're all out here, we're telling the truth, and we're using our name, then I just think they should too. And there's so much of this unknown sources and all that in ufology especially, that I just think it clouds the water. Don't you, Frank? Hello, Frank? Oh, can anybody hear me?
I hear you, Angela.
Okay.
You lost Frank.
Did we lose Frank?
I don't hear him.
I guess we did. But anyway, maybe he has a little microphone problem now. I know my microphone came unplugged a little bit, and that's, I had to figure out that I needed to get it connected right. So maybe Frank has a problem like that. I don't know. But anyway, I just feel like there's too much murky water in ufology now anyway, and everybody has their secret sources. And of course, you know, I guess that's to be expected, you know, but sometimes I just think if it's a secret source, then don't tell us about it, because we want to be able to track that down. Mm-hmm. But, Bob, you've had a lot of experiences out there, and because this is your wife, you've taken your children. And for much the same reason that Nathan did, just so, you know, they would know that you're okay and that you're not going crazy and that sort of thing, because it's still, even though it's becoming more accepted, I think, and there's a little bit more mainstream media on it, it's still sort of the no-no subject, and it's not really totally accepted. How do you feel about that, Bob?
Well, you know, well, the numbers as far as people who believe and people who have experienced, you know, things, I think the I have experienced or I have seen, you know, a UFO in the sky, on the ground, wherever it would be, opposed to people who have not seen and believed, I have no idea what the numbers are, other than I believe that it's well over half the population has seen or experienced, you know, something like that. And, you know, as far as my feeling is, we're human. If we can't touch it, see it, smell it, it can't be real. Angela, you know me. That's why I took the approach of putting all these witnesses together so that we would have some credibility due to the subject matter. So that we could get that investigation, those right people together. So,
why didn't you want to use your name and come forward and be public before this? What worried you about that?
Basically, I think what would worry anybody, and that is, when I come forward, I'm gonna tell the truth about everything that's happened to me. Now I got to take a, I can say what I want. I don't have to say it all. In throwing things around, people are worried about what people are gonna say or how people are gonna perceive them. You got to get around that if you're going to get anything done. So this thing is so huge, I'm willing to make that sacrifice. It seems small at this point, to try to further this thing and get the right folks involved. So like anyone else, just the ridicule, the mudslinging, all that will come,
So you know about that, and you sort of expect that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that just going over and over all the things, it's just huge, and it just, whatever it takes to get this thing done, that it falls on the right ears out there, that's what we need to do. We're only here for so long. We've only got so long to get things done. So, in my opinion, it just can't happen quick enough. And I thank everybody at that Open Minds Forum. You guys are great to band together and try to get it done.
Thank you. And, there's a lot of good people on Open Minds Forum. And if you haven't visited there, just go to openmindsforum.com and join up, because I don't think you'll be sorry. I've met some of the nicest people I've ever met in my life there. There's a group there now that are trying to get some equipment together for me and get me a plane ticket back up to Oregon, so that we can do some more investigation. And they're just real good people like that. And they reached out to me when the Stephenville episode first began. And I've been in touch with them ever since. And some of them have turned out to be my very best friends now. So I think we've got about 3 minutes till the break. And I am seeing a question here in the chat room, and one of them has been, are all these sightings at night? There's my friend Lillian wants to know, are there only nighttime sightings or are there daytime sightings?
I've had both daytime and nighttime sightings.
Okay. But are there more at night maybe? Because usually when we're talking about nighttime.
Right. An average night starts out at dark, and I'm out till daylight, so it's an all night thing. As far as staying up into the early afternoon on some occasions, that's what I've done, and that's how I've had those daytime sightings. Already being in a place, staying there all night into the daytime to experience daytime sightings.
All right, and they want to know, do you still see the balls of light in the daytime? Are they visible, or is that only at nighttime?
It's pretty common to see them at dusk, just before it gets dark. It's not uncommon to see them just before it gets, dark, but usually after dark.
But you're not going to see them at, high noon? Okay. In the daytime, I just think they would be difficult to see. They may still be there, and you just might not be able to see them. It's just going to be harder to pick them up that way.
Right. Yeah, they could still be.
Okay, we've got about 1 minute to break, and I hope that, you know, people are really listening to this, paying attention. This isn't just Bob Pitchell in Oregon. We've got Nathan Hansen. He has experienced something. You've already heard from Jamie McDowell and Jack Peters and their experiences. There's still others because, you know, Bob's been doing this for 7 to 8 years. And, of course, over the course of time, he meets somebody that he trusts and will take them out. And I don't think there's been even one person that has walked away without seeing something. Is that right, Bob?
Yeah, I'm 100%. You bet.
Yeah, so 100% on somebody seeing something. So
if that guy does come forward, if you're listening out there, you've got a 100% chance of a front row show.
I think, you know, the Frank Warren back here, my technical glitch has been fixed.
All right.
You know, the important thing to remember about all these witnesses, too, is that you know, their resumes, you know, these aren't Cletus on the park bench at XYZ Town, USA. I mean, these are very credible witnesses with very good resumes. And I would invite anybody to go back and listen to the first three interviews, because they get you to the edge of your seat, quite frankly. In fact, I've listened to all of them two or three times myself, and I participated in them. But it really is something to go back and recount.
Okay, I think we're at the break time now. So for those of you that aren't familiar, at the top of the hour here, we take about an 8-minute break, and you'll hear a little bit of music, and we will be back. You're listening to The Joyner Report, back in 8 minutes.
And 9 at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Is the U.S. government withholding the truth about extraterrestrials engaging the human race? Could formal disclosure about extraterrestrials take place during the Obama administration? This and more will be covered at X Conference 2010 at the National Press Club, 2 blocks from the White House and 12 blocks from the Capitol. The conference will include lectures, an awards banquet, a speaker's cocktail party, and, oh yes, a special luncheon presentation with yours truly. Come learn why, when it comes to UFOs, it's no longer just about lights in the sky. It's about lies on the ground. The National Press Club is just 2 blocks from Metro Center, and there are 24 hotels nearby. The event website, x-conference.com, that's x-conference.com, or call the Paradigm Research Group, 202-215-8344, that's 202-215-8344.
Good evening, and welcome to this week's worldwide broadcast of The Joyner Report. Now here's your host, Angela Joyner.
Welcome back to the second hour of The Joyner Report at WPRN-FM New Orleans and at UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm visiting this evening with Bob Pitchell, and some of you know him as Oregon Bob, and my other guest is Nathan Hansen, and they both had some pretty strange experiences in the forest of Oregon. My co-host tonight is Frank Warren of UFO Chronicles. Are you with me, Frank?
I certainly am. Glad to be here.
All right. So we have just heard in the first hour from Nathan and Bob about some unusual experiences in the Oregon forest. And in March, we had two more witnesses on. That was Jamie McDowell and Jack Peters. And they testified to these strange light orbs, this crazy phenomena. And Frank and I both, we really don't like the word paranormal, but that's all we can think of to describe all of this conglomeration of experiences that go on in the Oregon forest. Now, let's go back with Nathan. Nathan, are you still with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
And you were telling us earlier when we were talking in the break about a big orange fireball. So can you share that story with us?
Sure. It was one night Bob and I were going out, and we seen quite a bit that night. And on our way out of the forest and driving on the road, we drove by a farm field that had an old barn out in the field, and we noticed this orange huge ball of light, and we thought maybe it was the sunrise coming up. It was so enormous. But then as we drove up towards it and stopped the car to look at it, we noticed it wasn't the sun. It was a giant huge orb or some kind of ball of light, that it was almost the size of the barn, and it just sat there hovering right next to the barn as plain as day. And at the time, we didn't have a camera or anything with us, and we kicked ourselves for not having something to take a picture of that, because it was so awesome to see that, and there's just no explanation for it.
Did it disappear or go away, or did you finally drive off and leave it, or what happened?
It actually did disappear. As the sun came up, it kind of just faded away and disappeared.
So is that when you were sure that you weren't seeing the sun, when the sun did come up?
Yeah, the sun came up, and of course there's a lot of trees and hills, and you know, behind the barn, and it just got progressively lighter as, you know, as the sun came up. But this orange huge thing that was hovering over the field just disappeared.
And it did it ever move?
No, it just sat still. And hovered right over the field.
And it was about the size of the barn, so that must have been pretty big.
Oh, it was huge. It was enormous. I've never seen anything that big, actually. That's for like an orb. This thing was enormous.
Wow. Frank, do you have any questions about that?
It makes me think of one particular sighting that he and I discussed offline, or off the air rather, which I thought was interesting, and also it was reported in the news when you were paralleling the Columbia River, Nathan. Why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners that story?
Yeah, this was prior to Bob showing me any UFOs really in that area. And I was driving home along the Columbia River towards Irrigan, and as I was driving along, I seen something out of the corner of my eye on the passenger side of the vehicle, right over the river. And I looked over and I was like, "What the heck is that? That thing is really bright." And I sat and looked at it. And I was driving along, I had my radio on, and I kind of turned the radio down because it started getting staticky. And as I looked at the bright light, I noticed it reflecting off the Columbia River. So it was actually hovering over the Columbia River and moving with the same speed as I was driving down the road. And as I progressed down the road with this thing, and I kept looking at it, it finally just shot like a bolt of lightning down the river, and so fast that, you know, it was gone.
I knew that was
not a normal thing.
Well, and the interesting point is that you did have a collateral effect with the static on your radio.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And after that happened, a few weeks maybe or so later, there was other sightings in that area across the river right from where I seen this. Mm-hmm. And it actually made the news and was in the Tri-Cities news station.
Right, and we'll dig in the archives on that one, too, if we get a specific date and see if we can find that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, so...
What year was that?
What was that now?
What year was that? Did that particular sighting take place, Nathan?
Oh, that was probably, I'm guessing, probably 2005.
Okay. But before everything that went on that before Bob brought you into this fray of all the activity.
Yeah, exactly.
Safe to say that was your first sighting.
Yeah, that would probably be my first sighting. I've seen other things in the sky at night that I've kind of wondered what they were, but this is actually totally unexplainable and a phenomenon that I had.
Well, I just wonder if there's anything unique in this area or these areas, because I know it's not just one spot. You guys have gone all over. And what is the draw to Oregon? Do you have any ideas?
Silence. Yeah. who knows? I mean, you know, it is happening all over. It seems to me that things are speeding up a little bit. Things are there's more sightings and around the world. So I don't think we're special, but I do in that respect. But I do believe what we have is, from what I've been able to see and keep up with, I think we do have something that's very, very special, and we've got some things that we need to share with the right folks. We do have a special area, and or I'll say areas. But no, I think that this is happening all over.
Well, and if there is a lot of activity there, then why don't we hear more reports? Why don't we see more things on the news from your area?
I don't know. You know, I've traveled a lot of miles in different areas at night, sometimes 70, 80 miles plus in a night off-road to where, you don't see another soul. And there's not too many people out there that time of night. There's not too many people out doing exactly what I've learned to do. And, most folks that are in bed or at work or, they're not out in the middle of nowhere, chasing.
Well, I will say, for the three nights I was there on those logging roads, we met one other vehicle, and it was an old blue Mercedes. I think it was pretty dented up and everything. And Bob, you explained to me that sometimes people with DWIs or some, problem without a driver's license will use those roads to get from one place to another. Otherwise, they're crappy roads. They're not the roads you would want to take to get somewhere easily, because, you may come up on a log that's blocking your way, or, you're definitely going to get scratches and things on your vehicle. It's going to, because there's so many limbs and things sticking out there that, you if you had a nice car, you wouldn't want to take it through there.
Well, I've had, let's see, four really decent cars before the old van that I picked you up in. But I've wrecked every one of them. I mean, I've just ran them into the ground. I've ran two off cliffs too. So, it's been expensive in the car department for me.
And if you're out there, one time that what I just described happened to us, we turned down one of the logging roads. There was this huge, huge log tree over the path, and it would have taken 15 men to move it. We didn't have any choice but to back out of there, and oh my gosh, it was scary because you're on the side of the mountain, and Randall was trying to look with the night vision and give Bob directions on which way to turn the wheel so that we didn't go off the side of the mountain. And I got to tell you, that was a little shaky for me. I was scared there.
Yeah, that was probably about at least a 2,000 foot drop on our side there. It gets hairy out there. We usually carry chainsaws and PVs and chain and come-alongs and blocks and snatch. And, you know, we carry equipment, and we've actually opened up and maintained some of those roads. But if you don't do it every year, they just get overgrowth, you know. And that's why, you know, we could use the right kind of transportation, you know, some of these new zippy little four-wheel drive units that they have side-by-sides and four-place rigs like that would, and even there's a machine out there called an Argo, a six-wheel and an eight-wheel amphibious all-terrain vehicle. You know, we really need to get smarter in our transportation. It would really help us a lot.
Bob, have you been afraid when you're...
Well, you know, I've spent the night out there. I've camped out there. Nathan was brave enough to camp out there a night with me. You know, and then there's been times when I'm not scared. I'm like anyone else. You know, when the lights go out, I wish I had night vision on so I could see what was around me, you know. But no, I haven't got scared off, and that's not gonna happen.
And Nathan, can you estimate the number of hours that you've been out in the woods there?
I don't think I can. It's, you know, there's so many thousands of hours that Bob and I've been out there together that I can't really say how many hours, but it's been years since we've been going out there, so, and we've had so many experiences now that between Bob and I and you guys have all been out too. I'm sure you can probably write several novels off all this.
Right. So, you know, go ahead, Frank.
Well, the thing that often gets overlooked, particularly in this case, when we talk about UFOs by themselves. Ufology, you know, that's a transient phenomenon. It's like trying to catch a meteor. You know, it's not impossible, but it's not an easy thing to do. In this instance, you know, for example, when Bob said it from the very beginning, give me some time, come and stay with me, come on out, and I will show you something. And he's batting 1,000. You know, we have a repetitive, reoccurring phenomenon or different slices of a phenomenon that goes on in these areas that these guys know about. And, you know, how many opportunities do you get in this type of research where it's almost a guarantee you're going to see something? You know, you took Jack out there. Jack comes out, Jack Peters. He saw something. You take Jamie McDowell out there with a crew. She not only sees something, she has a physical effect that actually where the orb comes and hits her, for lack of a better description. Angela, you and Randall go out there and on the last day have an experience. And then Nathan comes into the fray. And, of course, he's taken his mother out there. She had an experience, and on and on and on. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that in regards to research. I mean, people that research, and God forbid, I hate to use the term, but here it is, the paranormal, 90% of the time they're hunting. In this case, the hunt turns into it's fruitful. You know, you bag the lion almost every time with this case.
It's like a hunter. You know, you'll have areas that you know where you know your game beds down. You know where they'll stand in bad weather. You know where they drink, and you know where they bed down. I took that aspect and put a twist on it, and I know where these things come. I know where they land. I know where they come from. I know what direction they come from. I know different areas where they, you know, they, for lack of a better word, they're established. They're all the time. And, you know, we've turned in to multiple locations. And what's really crazy is we're no longer really out hunting the lights in the sky. I'm not looking up at the sky. These are physical ground locations, and I know what to expect when I get there. Now it's crazy. My life has not been a normal one. I'll say that since this stuff started, but it's nevertheless it's going on, and I think I'm just glad that people are coming forward and telling their stories. That in the hopes we can get something done, get the right people in here.
Well, Bob, and none of that would have happened if it wasn't for you, so my hat is off to you.
Mine too.
Yeah, we wouldn't have gotten this far, and I'm forever the optimist. I mean, this thing, I said early on it will get legs, and I still believe it will. It's just like a snowball rolling down the hill. The more people we bring to the table, the more competent witnesses such as Nathan, it will start to expand, and people are going to want to know what's going on. And it only takes one. It only takes one right person that has the interest in the deep pockets, to fund something to do some proper investigative research. So I truly believe that we will we'll get there eventually.
The thing is, even if it were just the orbs and that was it, okay? To me, that would be worthy of investigation. But, you throw in orbs and you throw in energy that knocks people down. You throw in the craft that I've seen, and I only saw one. Bob and Nathan have seen, more than that. You put all of that together, it certainly deserves attention, I think.
Well, and that's a good point. Just the orbs, and you and I talked about this before we went on the air, particularly orbs that seem to be under intelligent control. I mean, even ball lightning, which most mainstream scientists would love to be able to study, but it's hard to study because it's like trying to catch a meteor again. But here you have an instance where these orbs are repetitive. They come back every time. So even with just that slice of a phenomenon unto itself is enough to precipitate further research, much less beings and craft, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Kira, last Saturday I took a trip out a couple nights in a row. Some big ball light, circumference was probably 10 foot across. Most likely something that was definitely guided and fast under intelligent control. Two of them hit the brush and were up around the van within, I'd say less than 2 minutes, and was able to film them. But they weren't coming. They weren't coming out. Out in clear view. Definitely see that whatever the lights were moving around. I told Angela, and I think I told you about that, Frank, and I thought maybe we'd go ahead and send that film to Antonio just to see what he can make out of it. I really haven't looked at it real, real close, but close enough that I don't think, other than being able to see that the light is definitely not our kind of light. It's that kind of light. That's why I'd like to see what Antonio Cousins would have to say about that, if he would be so kind as to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he would. Wouldn't he, Ange?
He would.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that night a little more in the near future. It was a pretty, pretty strange night. I guess what we'll do, we'll just leave it at that for now. I wanted to put that in just to let everybody know that, I'm still going out. I'm not giving, not even close to giving up on this thing.
Well, it's important to let our listeners know that, what we're discussing tonight is literally the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
I mean, you and I have talked for hours on the phone, Bob, and some of the things that you've related to me, that have happened that you've experienced on an ongoing basis, it's just absolutely mind-boggling. And Well, as we were talking the other day, you know, when witnesses see these things up close and personal, it changes their life. Everybody I know, every witness I know, and of course, and you actually take it to another level because you have seen, you in fact have seen beings. But people that have seen, a craft up close and personal without beings, it's literally changed their mind. Mike Fortson, of course, comes to mind with the Phoenix Lights. Ever since March 13th, 1997, and when he saw the huge craft fly over Phoenix, it's changed his life. Scotty Littleton with the Battle of Los Angeles, 1942, since the age of 8 years old, that experience changed his life. In terms of the depth of your experience, you could multiply it by a factor of 100. One can only imagine, what it's done and how it's affected you.
Fortson and Scotty, both good guys. Listened to their shows, talked with Mike, good man. It does. You experience something like that, and you will never be the same. I had a little pun, I told a few people that were kind of giving me the high eyebrow before we had went out, and I said, be careful what you ask for, you just might get it. And then before we went out, I said, well, it's time to put on that seatbelt because Kansas is going bye-bye. and those little puns leave an impression, on people. When they do come back out, they never forget, what they were told. And that goes for anybody that's out there that's listening that could steer us in the right direction.
What about you, Nathan? Bob. Nathan, did it profoundly change you in any way?
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget about it. Any of the things that happened up there it's just staying with me. It kind of draws you to it too. It's something that you always want to actually see more, and it's definitely drawn me in several times to see more, and it'll always be with me. I know it's definitely changed me too.
In what way do you feel changed?
Well, knowing that I know something that nobody else probably would know. Yeah, right. Most normal people haven't seen anything like that.
You feel right. Enlightened, so to speak. Your brain is out of the box. You're more than the sum of how we start. We begin this life with our brain in a box with this cognitive bias. I completely understand that. You feel enlightened, sure, you know more than what the average person knows and would even be willing to believe because you've seen it with your own eyes.
Exactly.
Right, not as much as knowing more than someone else, but experiencing things that they haven't yet experienced.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as knowing, I'm no closer to knowing or having any answers than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I know that the things that are going on are real. You have to accept them in some capacity. I think our brain, I think the average person out there is ready to hear the truth. I think that some people might have a hard time with it, like I said before, I want to be, if I could be part of breaking down the invisible bars that we live behind, Frank, I would just, it would just tickle me pink in that aspect of it, too.
Mm-hmm. What, Nathan, you said you weren't married, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Girlfriend, you live with anybody?
Yeah, I have a girlfriend.
And what does she think about all of this?
Oh, she's kind of scared of it, actually. I've taken her up one time, and it was actually a bad time of the year, and it was after a winter storm happened, and that there were several trees and logs on the road, and it was hard to navigate around. And she had seen a few orbs floating around, but not a whole lot that night. It was just really bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
But she was actually scared because, you know, we were afraid that we were going to be able to make it out of there because of all the trees and everything on the road.
What time of year was it?
It was in the winter, probably around January.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There was a question in the chat room about that, and I think this one came from Lillian, too. It rolled back a ways now. I don't really remember who it was from. But they wanted to know, is there more activity in winter or summer?
I'd say less. Well, there is more, more activity in the summer months and spring and fall, but the winter is just, it's not very active, probably a lot less active in the wintertime. We see a few things, but not a whole lot. Not a lot of activity.
Do you think that's because there's less activity, or it's just because you can't get out there as much?
I'd say, yeah, a little of both. It's hard to get out of there when trees and everything over the road, and you can't actually navigate with a vehicle through there.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it very difficult even to get around. And but as for certain areas that you're able to get to, you can see a few things, but they're not very active. They're more or less grounded, and not moving around quite as much as in the summer and spring and fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bob, you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Yeah, I say the activity level spikes in late spring through summer, and then in October, November, it drops down another 20%, and then another 20% after that until late spring again.
You know, Nathan, when I asked Bob this question when he first came on his debut show. Have you ever gone back during the day after? When I take you've seen a craft, correct?
Mm-hmm.
On the
That's
ground.
Correct.
Correct. Now, for example, when you saw what appeared to be a cabin or a house, you went back the next day. Have you ever done that with a craft during the day, looking for physical evidence or some evidence that something was there?
Yeah, actually in that same area where the house was, there was a craft in that same area, and I'd gone back during the day and tried to see if there was something there, and it was the same type of scenario, that, you know, that the ground hadn't even been touched.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no evidence of a blade of grass or anything being broken, you know.
And it appeared that this craft, we'll call it a craft for lack of a better description, was actually on the ground. From your perspective?
Yeah, it was sitting right on the ground.
And this was completely different from what appeared to be a house before, or a cabin, or what have you.
Yeah, it was completely different.
Hmm. Wow.
And it was not in that same location, right?
No, this was in the same. Not the exact same location the house was sitting, but within, you know, a few feet away, or 20, 30 feet, I'd say.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, you might as well tell us what that looked like.
Well, as it was sitting on the ground, it was pretty good size. I'd say 15 feet around, and kind of an acorn shape. And it was had rotating spherical cylinders that were intersecting each other and turning around, and they're bisecting or intersecting each other and turning colors at the same time. And it stayed just sitting on the ground with all these things turning around in circles.
Wow. Reminiscent of Kexburg. Very reminiscent of the Kexburg incident in 1965.
That was in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Kexburg.
But now they don't describe something bisecting and turning in that one, do they, Frank?
No, the acorn shape. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just the acorn shape, because really that's the first time that I have heard that description of the turning, the circular. Tell us that again, Nathan. I don't really have that in my head.
Yeah, it's really hard to explain because it's like it's kind of like a wheel turning around, one wheel turning one direction, and say that wheel is also turning another direction right beside it,
okay,
and another one going beside that. So there's like several of these wheels turning around in circles, and they're all intersecting each other.
Hmm.
And at the same time, they're turning different colors.
What like colors
greens
are
and
they?
Reds, greens and reds and orange. Kind of a rainbow of colors. It's just so awesome just to see it. I mean, you can't keep your eyes off of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Sergey in the V room brings up Ezekiel's wheel from the Old Testament. That's the first thing I was thinking of, ironically, when you were describing that. You know, if you go back to the Bible in Ezekiel, it talks about a wheel within a wheel. You made me think of that one. It's very interesting. But here again, we have what you would describe as a nuts and bolts craft.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that just floats my boat.
And did you see it take off, or did it disappear? What happened then?
It disappeared as the sun came up again. It was no longer there. It's like as soon as the light comes out, then they just kind of fade away.
Hmm.
And no evidence, no forensic evidence that there was anything there when you went down to investigate the scene the day after.
No, there was no evidence whatsoever. It was like there was nothing even ever there.
You know, this is actually a good thing because that area has really never been disturbed, and it's prime ground for someone to come in and have a contamination-free area.
Yeah. There's actually a place in up here in Northern California, not too far from Sacramento, which is where I am. And I have heard reports from different people over the years of UFO activity, and the words, the descriptions, portal and dimension has come into play. Witnesses have described to me over the years that these things seem to disappear, but there's activity in one of the canyons, and I can't help but think of the commonalities. In specific geographic locations, and of course, in this instance, we're back into out in the country, in a wooded, forested area, non-populated area. You just have to wonder, aside that from being the obvious common denominator, is the activity there because it's unpopulated, It just evokes so many questions.
I just think it's one of those right areas. It obviously is some kind of an ongoing thing in that particular area. I've seen so many different kinds of craft in that area. It's almost like some kind of a time travel port or a portal of something like that. It has to be because, as Nathan described, when the sun comes up, it just, it's just, you can't see that spectrum anymore.
Well, and there's places like this with consistency in repetitive phenomena down in South America. And then early in the show, we mentioned Ash Fork. We talk about James Gillian's Ranch in Washington. You've got the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah. I mean, these are repetitive things with very common phenomena. Oh, the orbs, again, is another common thing that goes on.
To the Gillian Ranch, the Skinwalker Ranch, and our stuff, it might be interesting to get all those heads together. That might not be a bad idea. Are you listening out there?
In the chat room, we've had a couple of people ask, Bob, They want to know, have you pursued any of the military bases around in the area? Do you know if they have any kind of experimental craft, and could that be what's going on?
That was the first thing I checked into years ago, and there just isn't anything to support it. And that goes along with personal observation. There's just nothing to support it. It's all been that of, like I said, it's all been, there just has been none of that kind of activity, those kind of beings being saw, and, nothing.
Okay, well, go ahead.
I don't rule that out, but I just, I've never seen any military activity in any of those areas.
Right. We've got about 8 minutes, so you want to tell us, Bob, about maybe one more type of craft you've seen?
Actually, the most spectacular craft that I'd ever saw, and will never forget, is it was a large craft. It would be like if you held two large plates together, and you would hold them together and stand them on end, and then standing that on end, there were three large windows with one large center window, and I had night vision and was looking through a monocular at this thing and was able to see inside, and it was so big, you wondered how it stayed up there. But what was really phenomenal about this thing is it changed shapes several different times. And the whole light source on this thing was that of emerald green. And it actually had spiral staircases that went down the center of it. And I could see that... there were different levels to it, and observed that ship for a long time, and some activity, actually quite a bit of activity going on in it. But just the sheer size of it, I'll never forget that. It was so large, so huge.
That's just amazing. And it's amazing to me that, people see crafts all over the world, but here is an area where you're seeing several different types of craft in the same area.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what, there's, the acorn shape, the classic bell shape, some Star Wars looking stuff that almost looks like a Star Wars junket. Actually, the one that we saw on the way back from the airport where you couldn't get out of the van and Randall could, I described that one as kind of a junket. The way that it's put together, it almost looks like, barrels and pipes and weird things connected together. It's pretty strange. And then, of course, the ornate-looking grass, as you saw that night in the forest. I've seen a few different kinds of those there's, at least a dozen different craft I've seen. The cylinder-shaped craft, seen those. And then one night, when myself and Nathan actually camped out in this area, we had a ship that went over the top of us and shook the ground for 3 to 5 minutes, and the ship just kept coming and coming and coming, and we had a hole through the forest canopy about 50, 60 feet across, looking up at the sky, watching this thing for 3 to 5 minutes pass over us.
Okay, Bob, hang on 1 second. Now you say it shook the ground. Did this thing make any sound?
It made sound like it was like thunder, Frank. It was very noisy.
Would you equate that to some mode of transportation, an engine?
I don't know if it was that or just more of the sheer wind that this thing was breaking. It had to be, just huge. But like I said,
was this the wind movement was from the movement of the craft, or was for part of a propulsion system of some sort?
Well, what I was hearing was more like it could have been a propulsion system, Frank, but it was, you know, the sound was deafening. I remember us both looking at each other and saying, I can feel the ground shake. And you know, Nathan can probably fill it in from there. It was really something else.
Yeah, just to see it, it felt like you were, that was the end, and you were going to get taken away to another planet. Yeah. You know,
would you speculate?
That's the feeling that I had.
Well, Nathan, would you speculate that the ground movement or shaking or vibration was from the sound? Could it have been from the sound opposed to a movement of air from a propulsion system?
Speaker? Like a speaker sound?
No, I'd say more like a propulsion system, because you could hear it up at, actually projecting from the ship above your head.
Was there heat?
No, I'd say a breeze blowing, though, from it.
Was there a variation in the light in correspondence with the thundering or movement?
No, I don't think there was a change in light. It actually maintained the same light spectrum. That it was kind of a cylinder-shaped type of ship. It was, you know, a classical UFO-looking ship where your head, and it was round shapes, and you could see underneath it actually the windows that were in the base of it.
You saw windows?
Yeah, there's actually windows in the base of it. And they were like in a circle, and around the windows was light. And I can assume that the light was part of the propulsion system.
Mm-hmm.
And it was turning around in a circle.
The reason that I ask about any variation in regards to the light, for example, during the Phoenix Lights episode, there were witnesses that made reports that said when white lights turned to red when the vehicle accelerated. Steve Allen with the Stephen Light said the same thing with the Stephen Light UFO. When it sped up and went away, the white lights turned red. So that was the connection I was searching for, if there was any variation in that way.
And there is a connection. Go ahead. There is a connection there. I've seen craft turn from, you know, and from white lights to red just before they take off at a vertical, you know, high speed, and they're gone. So I have seen that on different craft.
And this, now when you say it was a standard UFO, this was a disc-shaped craft?
No, we're actually...
It was round.
We've seen so much, Frank.
This in this instance,
we're talking about two different times here. I can tell by what he's describing. I know what he's describing, but we're talking about two different crafts.
Well, the craft with the thundering sound that was right overhead, was that
right, that was the one where I was looking out of the forest canopy, probably about a 60-foot hole in the canopy. And all I could see was just the bottom of this ship, which I assumed was the bottom, and it just kept coming and coming and coming, and there was, like, no end to it. I kept seeing the underneath side, and it reminded me of that Star Wars junket-type put-together thing, like barrels and pipes and things that were connected, and grates and weird-looking stuff, and it just kept coming and coming. Nathan, that was the night that we actually camped down in the west section.
Oh, okay.
And that was the night where, you know,
guys, we're just about...
We're out of time. Yeah. I was just about to say that, too.
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of things happen out there, but yeah, that was something else. It was a good 3 to 5 minutes that it just kept coming and coming, you know, before the end was there and I could see, you know, stars in the sky again.
Wow. All right. We're going to wrap this up now, and I want to thank Bob Pitchell, Nathan Hansen, Frank Warren for another great show. Hopefully, we will be able to get back out to Oregon and do some investigation. We're just waiting for the right person to come forward and help us out with that. Next week, Joe Montaldo is going to be giving a presentation in New Jersey. So it looks like it's going to be an archive night on Friday night. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.